Welcome back to My Seminary Life. I'm your host, Brandon Knight, and it is the long-awaited, I'm finally making good on one of my promises. I don't know why I make promises here on the show. They never go according to plan. It always happens. It always does. I'm not announcing any plans ever again when it comes to My Seminary Life. I'm making that announcement now that there will never be another announcement. But here today, we're going to be talking about Nephilim, the sons of God. We're going to get a little weird, a little creepy. We're just right around the corner from spooky season. So just consider this your... consider this a little bit of a precursor to spooky season. We're dialoguing about Nephilim. And joining me here today are the hosts of Friday Night Frights, which you can catch here on the Anazao Ministries podcast network. And don't worry, friends, you've heard these guys' voices before because they host an accumulative 29 other podcasts. Christian Ashley, Joe Day, welcome back to the show, guys.
Thanks for having us, man. Been looking forward to this one. Surprisingly given the subject matter.
Well, people know you guys from other shows, but I don't think I've ever had you on to speak specifically towards the Friday Night Frights genre that you guys have been doing. So just real quick, tell us all about Friday Night Frights as a way to get us started on what is one of the few very creepy conversations that we can have inspired by scripture. So what's Friday Night Frights all about?
Yeah. So I started it as a solo project because I'm insane. And we all have suffered this at one point in time of having new show ideas. And could I add someone else to it? Or I just want to do it myself. I started by myself. And the general idea being we go through different topics, and by we I originally mean just me, cryptozoology, ufology, the paranormal, religious strangeness, which this would be under, true crime, and then like the weird and the unexplained is kind of like, and the rest, anything that doesn't like fit one of those other topics completely. So I went there through a while, and I did polls on a systematic ecology Priest of the Geeks fanduel. And Joe had commented on one, hey, like, if Mothman wins, like, can I be on? And I'm like, well, no, I hate Joe. Why would I ever do that? No, I need someone else on there. Joe, I love working with Joe because he challenges me. He's very fun. I love getting into arguments with Joe. And he was like, man, this was fun. And I said, well, do you want to come again? He's like, yes. So it just kind of like, without becoming a thing, it became a thing, not planned, that he just joined me on there. So that's my thoughts on it. What do you think, Joe?
I mean, that's about the size of it. Somebody needs Christian needs somebody to give him a hard time on a monthly basis. And so I'm exactly just the man for the job. But yeah, I also am insane and into spooky nonsense and all of that. And so it's been a really interesting blend because in a lot of respects with the rotating door of topics, we kind of found a really interesting blend because the things that I'm pretty like into, pretty convinced of, pretty, you know, I find more plausible tend to be some of the subjects where Christian's like, I don't know about that. And likewise, some of the stuff that he's like, yeah, absolutely. That's a thing. I'm like, I don't know about that. And so we tend to fall on opposite sides of the fence by the time the episode is done, but that's half the fun.
Yeah, that's definitely half the fun. It's kind of nice that that's naturally how it's played out. It's very reminiscent to me of like BuzzFeed Unsolved, where you had Ryan, who basically believed everything, and then Shane, who was a skeptic towards everything. So it's kind of cool that you guys kind of meet more in the middle of like some things. Sure, Joe might be into it and Christian is not. Mothman is a great example of that one. And then there's, you know, Christian's into some things, and then Joe's like, yeah, I don't know about that one. I thought this was a really good topic to bring you two in, because not only have You've explored the, what was the term that you used a moment ago? Christian religious strangeness. What was strangeness. The term you used a moment ago? Okay.
Yeah, religious strangeness.
Not only is this falling under the religious strangeness category, but in your other projects, you two have spent a lot of time in the Old Testament. Christian's been going through the Torah and Let Nothing Move You. Joe's been doing a series. I think it's on Buddy Walk, right, Joe? The demystifying series. Is that over on Buddy Walk?
That's on Kingdom on the Road.
Kingdom on the Road, doing the demystifying series, trying to make the Old Testament not as intimidating as it sometimes comes off for listeners or for people in the church. And so this seemed like the right one to bring us all together. Plus, we knocked it out of the park with that creation theories episode we did like a year ago now. Like, that was insane. Joe, by way of content that you and I have recorded, for me personally, that creation theories episode is right up there with the H.P. Lovecraft systematic ecology episode of just like, how did we do this for so long and not crack? We were pretty close, but...
Yeah.
That was a good one, too.
So... what is religious strangeness? What is this term that you guys use? What does that mean?
Yeah, when I was coming up with the different like categories, it's like, because you always want to discover things like, you know, lost tribes of Israel or the Ark of the Covenant or what have you, which are two things we've covered. Well, I covered the first one. Joe joined me for the other one. It's like there are things that come up in those being Christianity and Judaism primarily, but other things too. You go through Hindu mythology, and there seems to be like this higher technology level. Is that just a writer creating something? Is it something they're actually reporting that happened? Like, what's going on? What is it about the things that people worship and believe in? But there's also this thing that just comes out of nowhere at times. Like you look, the Urim and Thummim are never explained in scripture, just to give an example. They just show up on the scene. They're just a thing that everyone should know about, apparently. But like we, you know, 2,000 years removed, 3,000 years removed from those events, kind of go, what? And the question becomes, well, what are these things? Is the Ark of the Covenant still around? You know, are there lost tribes of Israel out there in the world? Or why do these statues cry milk or blood or something like that? How could that be explained? Is it supernatural? Is it something religious in origin? Like, what is causing this? So kind of like blanketing all those things under that term is how I'd kind of describe that.
Okay.
When we hit this sort of subject, this is very much in that wheelhouse where, like, Friday Night Frights is a blend of BuzzFeed Unsolved, Art Bell Coast to Coast, and Unsolved Mysteries. And... this is very much in that realm of there are some things that we hit where we're like, we cannot actually, in good faith, give you a definitive answer to what is happening. We are just going to be honest and authentic about this really relatively like strange phenomena or event or concept or item that we see, you know, very present, but we don't have like an explanation for it. And we both have talked on and off air about the fact that there is something healthy about sitting in the fact that there are some aspects of our faith that are just totally unexplained, because for anybody who has lost track of the rabbit, we literally worship a dude who came back from the dead, like literally died, came back to life. And so like that, if that's where you're starting the conversation, you have to accept that there are concepts and different things that exist, especially in the Old Testament, pre any kind of chronology of history in the sense that we have it post-Enlightenment, that we have to sit in the weirdness of that, because that's a part of the whole of the story of what led to this point in time, our faith, our ability to be able to have constant relationship with God and all of those things. And it's one of those weird things that, like, for me in my solo work, when we were in the Demystifying series, we are going line by line, verse by verse. Like, we are literally reading through the entirety of, we're in 1 Samuel right now, and we're going through beat for beat for beat. We spent, I don't know, a month, maybe 6 weeks, just in, like, the first four chapters of Genesis. Because so much of it is mythocentric, and then you have, on top of it, trying to decipher all of the ways of, hey, because of this portion of it, that's why this group of people believes this. Because of that portion of it, this is why that group believes that. And at least accepting the fact that there is a buffet of things to consider in all of it, in an effort to not be freaked out by the fact that there is not a definitive answer, and be okay with the fact that you don't have a definitive answer, and not allow it to be more important than it is, because then you get to have fun with it. Then you get to say, hey, what about this? Hey, here's this wackadoo thing that I heard. Hey, here's this thing. Because trust me, in one of my random things that I was that I was looking into earlier on this year, I've got a story for you all on one of the more weird aspects of this whole Nephilim thing that I heard somebody posit a theory on.
Yeah, and for me, I'm someone who loves my absolutes. I like to be absolutely certain about things. If I say something, I want it to be truth. But at the end of the day, like Joe said, there are some things out there I'm never going to have the absolute 100% total truth on, because I'm going to have to interpret something, or I'm going to listen to what someone says and then judge it by something else. And I like studying stuff like this because there's a question out there. And the question is Mothman real? Can we find the Ark of the Covenant or something like that? That has an answer, but I can't fully satisfy myself with the answer by saying this is absolutely true. But what I can do is research as much as possible and narrow it down enough to where I feel good enough saying I think it's this.
Meanwhile, I'm the guy who's like, I don't know, man. This is a pretty compelling theory. I really think that this is the most plausible explanation of the whole thing. And I get to watch Christian squirm live in front of everybody when there is not a definitive answer to what it is that we're talking about.
I hate it.
Well, I'm really interested to see where we all kind of land on this one. This is actually not the first time I've covered this topic on My Seminary Life. I reran the episode a couple months ago. It came up during when I was in systematic theology. And in that episode, and in the like short positional paper I had to write, basically I had to focus in on what are the more traditional answers, the more heard of answers when it comes to the sons of God, the Nephilim. And look, we can review that here, but I know this means something else, but I'm gonna say it, we're just gonna let the freak flag fly here and just let all these other answers come to the table. Because for me personally, like, yeah, I had to write a positional paper on it, and there's an side I kind of lean towards, but to me, I'm going to entertain other ideas. No one's going to hell over this one. No one's being separated from God over this one. And it may affect other things in theological work, but again, like, to me, this whole Sons of God, Nephilim thing, you brought up the Uma and the Therma, or whatever it is, earlier. You brought up Uma Thurman and Kill Bill earlier. You brought up that earlier of just like, it shows up because the original audience would have known what that is, and the rest of us goes, cool.
What?
I feel like that's the same thing with this, of like,
yeah.
It seems more like this was my big takeaway in that older episode of like, at the end of the day, within the context of the passage, this seems like it's more of a timestamp. This is more so giving an indication to the original readers of when this was happening. But obviously, we don't care about that part. We want to talk about what the heck is going on here. So would one of you please take us back to that passage and basically like briefly explain what is going on here in this passage before we start going into the theories?
Do we have a preferred translation?
No. Joe, do you have one?
Not King James.
Fair.
A King James it is. First one that showed up was NIV.
Fair.
Genesis 6:4. Oh, they directly translated. Okay. The Nephilim were on the earth in those days, and also afterward when the sons of God went to the daughters of humans and had children with them, by them. They were the heroes of old, men of renown.
The Bible is not mythology. Just want... And then we have this, like, so the sons of God go into women and the result is something called a Nephilim. Is that what we're working with here? Are we still on the same page?
Pretty much.
Okay.
It's one of those things that, like you said before, you're just reading, going along. We've had the genealogy that came before this, and then suddenly, mankind's going the bad way, and boom, Nephilim. Boom, sons of God. Boom, daughters of men. The three separate proper terms. What do these mean?
And then, right after this, the passage goes on, it's going to be the flood. That's what's going to be coming up. So, go ahead, guys. What's going on here?
All right. Well, out of the three of us, I'm the more biblical literalist. Not to say that these guys don't believe in any literalism in the Bible, but I'm more hardcore, as it were, tougher. And this is one of those I have to do a lot of work on. And that's a hard part of being more literalist, is that some things you can go, okay, whatever, move on. Not the same, that's what you guys do. But you go, okay, so we went through the descendants of Seth and Cain, and now we're here and humanity is in this state and God himself is looking at what's happening on the earth. And he's like, I'm not going to contend with these people forever. I'm going to limit the amount of time they've got left. And then the explanation is given because these things are happening. That's kind of a part of the reasoning. And it goes even further, growing in wickedness. So going by that standard, something, one of these groups involved is most definitely acting and wickedness is how I would look at that. And there are multiple ways to interpret this. You've got the more classical idea of these are fallen angels and or demons, depending on how you interpret that, you know, intermarrying with humanity, and the offspring of that becomes these mighty men because they're jacked up with human DNA and what passes for angel / demon DNA. Then you have the other interpretation of, well, the daughters of humans were Cain's descendants because they're set apart compared to Seth's, who are like where the line of Jesus will come from through Seth. So the sons of God are actually Seth. And they're intermarrying, and that's causing people to fall and get into wickedness, and therefore that sets them apart in a special way. Then I think another big one would be they're just kind of like your mythological heroes of the day. And like, there is nothing supernatural about it. They're just like your Nimrods, your Gilgameshes, and so on and so forth are just like that super special. And because of that, people are maybe worshiping them as gods or something like that. It could be any of those things. I tend to go with the first interpretation, but I'm interested to hear what everyone else here has to say.
Throw an additional one. I made reference to this before. So this is the year of reading for me. And one of the books that I read, I found myself jumping down a rabbit hole on Adam and Eve. And I'm going to throw, as Christian knows, well, both of you know, I am one to do. I'm gonna lob a grenade and then walk the other way. I'm not going to address it. I will not be taking any questions after I say this. I do not believe, I actually think that the Bible makes a lot more sense if Adam and Eve were not the first humans. I think when science is factored into it, we can have had a historic Adam and Eve up to several thousand years ago, you know, like without going into all of the science behind it. The only thing that I take out of the creation narrative as a literal component is a historic Adam and Eve, because Jesus speaks to it. And that's literally the only reason why I even take that, because I'm one, as Christian talked about, he is more of a literalist. I am not. There are aspects of scripture that should be read as literal or historic or whatever the case may be. But there are huge swaths that, I don't know, science would really like a word if you read it literally. Like, I'm not going to die on the hill, but I'm also going to be honest about the fact that, like, there's an insurmountable mountain of evidence that shows that, like, this should not be taken literally. And so, in with this being in the vicinity of the creation narrative, it sits in this weird spot, because it could, while it's almost like separate from the Adam and Eve narrative, it's also close enough in the story structure of Genesis that it could very easily be incorporated into a mythocentric approach to a story that's being told. And so one of the more I will say, in all attempts of being charitable, I will say unique takes that I heard on it, in this whole idea and spirit of Adam and Eve not being the only, or not being the only humans when they were on the earth, then you have this whole chunk of humanity that's pre-Adamic. And the sons of God are the pre-Adamic humans intermarrying with the post-Adam and Eve contingent of humanity, and all of that sort of stuff. That was the first time I had ever heard a reference to that in particular, where it's not so much about it being supernatural as it is about being different classifications of humanity.
Would this be Neanderthals? Because I remember hearing something vaguely similar to this before, someone proposing an idea like that.
Yeah, I believe that the person that was positing this was trying to make it fit into that being Neanderthals.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you're, to quote my co-host here, your mileage may vary on on how plausible you think that one in particular is, but if I had to, if I had to put my chip down in a particular category, it reads more like a component of an intentional story designed to convey a very particular concept, rather than being like a literal supernatural group of people that, because of some exposure to the divine or exposure to the spiritual, have created, like, they've had offspring that are, you know, larger in stature or superhuman-esque or those kinds of things. The other thing to take into consideration is you can see somebody and think that they are taller than they actually are. you can look at different periods of history and say what classifies as tall. In today's world, you look at guys like Shaquille O'Neal, 7 feet tall. They are considered giants. You look at somebody back then, and you may have had a group of people who were genetically taller or larger in stature, and the only word that they would have for that would be giant. So there's a couple of different routes you can go without ever having to go down the road of any kind of literalistic interpretation of this being something like supernatural.
Okay. Can I jump in? I want to say some things towards Joe's idea here. So I know you're not taking questions, Professor, so I will not ask any direct questions on this. I have not heard this one. A lot of the ones Christian brought up are a little bit more of the classical, I think was the word you used, a little bit more of the classical, where we're trying to basically more so understand the terms being used here, which I think is important, especially if you are going to be in a more literalist camp. It makes sense. I'm not necessarily of the perspective of the pre-endemic kind of approach, that like gap theory. I talked about that in the creation theories episode, that gap theory isn't really for me, but I can kind of see where some people get to it. I will say this. That makes sense. That isn't the wonkiest, craziest idea I have heard when it comes to all of the Nephilim, sons of God stuff. That it's basically the generation of Adam intermingling with the pre-generation of Adam, I guess is one way you could put it. And I think the reason why this one kind of stands out to me of like, okay, I'm willing to put that in the more plausible pile, is because why don't we see this anymore? I do typically fall more towards the, as Christian was talking, or more literal, going at this from the term standpoint. So I kind of fall more on the supernatural, like there's an intermingling going on here. The problem with the supernatural intermingling, I'm willing to point out the flaw in this thing, is that why don't we still see this? Why isn't there still a something going on here? And Joe is right. I will also bring up what Joe said there right there at the end about giants, that this isn't maybe necessarily Jack and the Beanstalk kind of giants that we're talking about here, that height is a historical thing as well. But all that is to say that that's a very interesting, I had not heard that one before, Joe, but I can definitely see how it could fit, especially if you are going to take more of the like gap theory, mythocentric approach towards the early chapters of Genesis in particular.
Oh, poor Brandon. The Smithsonian has gotten to YouTube. If you had been down the YouTube trails that I have and my father has, and he's gone more far in certain directions than I, you'd know they're covering it up because giants have been buried across America for hundreds of years. And they took away the bones and burned them because that would disprove evolution and it would prove the Bible to be true. So it's not your fault. You've been brainwashed by the Smithsonian, specifically them.
Specifically the Smithsonian, not any of the other ones. There are other museums. They do know there's other museums, right?
The all-knowing Smithsonian, working with the Illuminati and the Hollow Earth reptilians or whatever, they're bringing this to the forefront because they want you to doubt the Bible.
Mm.
So one of my favorite things about working with Christian, and I do this to him too, so this is not a one-way street at all. as you both know, I am one that I will drop into a bit very quickly, and I will sell it like, kayfabe, brother, kayfabe. Like, I will sell the gimmick. And the Mothman episode was where I first did that. I was like, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to have some fun here. And I'm like, I'm bought in. I'm convinced. On the air, that red light comes on, and I'm like, oh, Mothman's, it's all real. Like, every single solitary bit of it's real. And, like, I did not smarten him up at all to what's happened. Well, he did the same thing to me with that gimmick that he just pulled about the whole. And he's so, like, I love Christian. He is probably the most conservative of all of the people that I work with. And we sit on this fascinating paradigm of having a very odd couple relationship, because I have been accused of a great many things over the last couple of years. Being overly conservative is not one of them. And so we will rib each other on the regular with stuff like that. I was bought in like a mark. I 100% thought that he was 100% serious the first time I heard him do that bit. He had me. He had me.
And look, yeah, so I bring that up because that's why I hate this topic. I despise this topic, and I only came here because I love you. Because there is unfortunately a large portion of YouTube, just YouTube alone, where you can go down these narrow pathways and alleyways, and they start off very simple. It's like, okay, that's plausible. Okay. And then they start going into these grand conspiracy theories of how people far more conservative than me, if you can imagine that for a moment, that there are people out there far more conservative than I. And then they take these things and they have to finagle their way to, I think this way, therefore I have to connect dots that don't exist, but I have to make people believe the dots because I believe the dots now. And they will make up whatever it is for the sake of clicks, views, but also because they legitimately believe them. And there are some shysters out there, as there always will be, but there are some, they've gone too far down the rabbit hole, and they're in Wonderland, and they've gone crazy. And I hate this topic because it starts off with like a genuine question. What are these things? These Nephilim, these sons of God, these daughters of men. And then it spirals into nonsense that makes Christianity look stupid. But if there's anything Christians are great at, it's making Christianity look stupid. And yeah, I've been guilty of that too in the past. And I'd rather not repeat the cycle. So yeah, even though I do take the interpretation, and we can explain that later on, of these being fallen beings intermarrying with humans, I'm not going to say that as an absolute fact. And if you don't think the same way I do, you're an idiot. You're not as smart as me. And that's what really grinds my gears about all this.
You know what really grinds my gears? It's when I can't find the droids that I'm looking for.
Yeah, what's that about?
Yeah, this is unfortunately a gateway into a really weird section. And that's why I wanted to throw in, because if I'm on one of these guest appearances and I don't say something that somebody thinks is heretical, and what am I really doing here in the first place? Like,
true. What's the point? Doing?
Right.
Yeah. So people treat this as if it's theology prime, as if it's the close-handed matters of the Christian faith. And they hold a specific creation narrative as sacrosanct. And unfortunately, when you start to get into a lot of these side roads, it is the dark underbelly of this topic that a lot of those hyper-conservative, hyper-conspiratorial aspects of this topic tend to have the undertones of an us versus them mentality, where it is somewhere rooted in some version of racism, superiority, different things like that. Where there is a group of people that stem from a group of people that are lesser than for some reason or another, and one thing leads to another, and next thing you know, this group of people in modern day is a stand-in for that group of people back in the day. So regardless of whoever you would flock towards or pull towards or whatever like that, listening, seriously, don't go down the road of putting too much water in literally anything that any of us have to say when it comes to this. And I only say that because none of us have the ability to say, thus saith the Lord on this. None of us have the smoking yes. gun.
Yeah.
Like, I'll use my version of the, you know, you guys both are going to terms and finding, like, that's kind of the inroad towards a closer to divine or supernatural sort of perspective on this. Okay, my turn to look at terms and titles and go an entirely different route. Sons of, for anybody who doesn't otherwise know this, sons of can mean, and oftentimes does mean, in an older context, to be a classification of group of people to talk about descendants of, or to talk about a group of people. This being a group of people that have been categorized not just by a nationality or not just by actual physical heritage, but by a characteristic. And if this whole thing is mythocentric, if this is a story passed down as it was, these original chapters were stories that were told orally, passed down from generation to generation, first and foremost. They are heavily, heavily, heavily rooted in Jewish mythology, regardless of whether or not it actually happened. To say the word myth does not mean fake. Some people think it means story, fabrication, fake. It means origin. That is what mythology means. And so even if you look at it from a more classical, this actually happened, thus saith the Lord sort of mentality, then you're still looking at a myth. It's still mythology. Because it's still an origin story. It's still rooted very firmly in that camp. And I personally put my flag down at basically everything pre-Abraham falls into this category. Okay. And so that, so when you look at this and you look at that verbiage and terminology, in the linguistic model of the day, this could have just as easily meant a classification of a group of people based off of a specific characteristic, never meant to mean something hyper literal. Mm.
Remind me when this is over to come up with a really good clickbait title for YouTube, because someone's in for a rude awakening by this point.
Christians yep. destroyed a Smithsonian's life.
There we go.
Christianity versus
the world. The lies. Versus the lies.
The world.
Versus the world. Just go full Scott Pilgrim on this. Oh my gosh. But you know, I'm glad this is the turn that this took, because I guess just to be clear, although if you've been listening to My Seminary Life for a while, this will come as no surprise to you. This wasn't some attempt to go down the conspiracy theory rabbit hole and eventually the Smithsonian is the bad guy. Never even been there, guys. Give me a break.
It's actually really cool.
I bet it is.
That's what they paid me to say.
Yeah. And to make that Ben Stiller movie. Wasn't one of the Night of the Museums at the Smithsonian? Oh, no, yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, yeah. But like, I think this, I'm glad we've kind of gotten to this place, because genuinely, this is to be fun. That is my purpose, is to be a little fun, because at the end of the day, we ain't gonna know. And it doesn't really matter that much. Again, if anything, it's a timestamp for people to know. Even if I think, Joe, would you say even from that approach, from like a more mythology standpoint, that still kind of works? Like it's the setup to a story of like, this is when this event occurred.
Yeah. So to smarten anyone up that is curious, kind of in, you know, when you use that phrasing, mythocentric, anything like that, like that sort of verbiage to explain a section of scripture, it can seem very nebulous. But it tracks with a linear timeline. It's just not a timeline that's held by everybody. So you have the fall that takes place, and then from that point you have a series of events that leads to the introduction of the first puzzle piece of what's ultimately going to become the fulfillment of God's ultimate promise in Abraham. And so when you're looking at this series of stories, basically what you're looking at from a Jewish perspective is what is the heart and character of God? What is God doing with humanity? Those are the two big questions that you have to hold on to. And they will get you. They're not going to explain every little thing. They're not going to dot every I. They're not going to cross every T. But if you hold those two questions at your core, as you read through the Old Testament, you are going to at least be able to build a framework. And that's where we can start to get into whether or not this is real in the sense of this physically happened, or these are stories. They're both conveying the same thing in the same principles about God and humanity and our place in God's story.
Okay.
I think something super important to bring up too is when it comes to scripture itself, the word Nephilim. You're not going to see the word Nephilim in Hebrew as far as translations. It's going to be the word for the definite article describing the noun, Ha Nephilim. I think you're also going to see like Nephal, which is like falling. Then there's a specific word. I think it's Kara for cutting or felling, as in something that cuts someone down, brought to them. But, oh, well, we're talking about it so much. It must show up more than once. And yes, it does in Numbers. And that is to describe the Anakite, the Anakim, as descended from the Nephilim. Now, what does that actually mean? Did they survive the flood somehow? That's another thing people focus on. Or is it something, if it could happen pre-flood, could it happen post-flood? And that's kind of what I take as that thing.
Okay.
And we have to be careful, because then after that, I'm fairly certain that the word Nephilim or Ha-Nephilim is only used three times in the context of Genesis and Numbers. So the rest of them that these same people I talked about earlier for their cliques and everything will bring up is from everyone's favorite subject, and actually mine because I love studying them, but for different reasons, is the Apocrypha and the Pseudepigrapha. So a lot of this comes from First Enoch and, you know, all the stuff with the Watchers, and that kind of is... And my personal opinion that I would actually think is right is that a lot of the Apocrypha and Pseudepigrapha are biblical fan fiction. And as someone who has been in fan fiction circles, you can see the signs. It's someone who likes an IP and they want to write their own thing and put it into the mix.
And that's where I think it's fascinating that I could jump into a whole bit about the fact that, like, with you guys both, you know, thinking more in terms of the supernatural and all of that, I would just want to point out for anybody listening who might otherwise be curious and have not at all experienced seminary, this is the kind of brain rot that happens when you expose yourself to seminary, is you start to think in terms like this.
I was going to say that Christian really was using that seminary education there with that Hebrew breakdown. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. 100%. You can tell he's still wet behind the ears. But like he's fresh out of the gate. Like you can tell, like, life hasn't beat that out of him yet. Just give it time. It's one of those things that I find fascinating, because as somebody who studies the mystics, and I tend to quote and focus on the mystics a lot more than others, for one simple fact. It is a vehicle. Nothing more, nothing less. It is the group of people who seem to have the best verbiage for describing the with God life. Done. Like there's nothing more to it than that. There's a little bit in my brain of like, yeah, as somebody who has been called 87 different flavors of heretic, to know that these guys fought power and were deemed heretics for it, there is a weird kinship that's felt there when talking about that. But this is a topic where I find fascinating, because I think since the last time that I've been on here, I've adopted a new moniker for myself because it's just the one that makes the most amount of sense. I've come to deem myself an interdenominational pastor, because I have a lot of respect for a lot of different denominations and a lot of different groups of people. And honestly, I don't think any one denomination, even though there are some that have a lot of faults, they cannot be described solely on their faults. It's disingenuous. And so for me, I'm exposed to a lot of different denominational thinking and all of that. And you have a lot of people who try to discredit the Desert Fathers,
yes,
and the Mystics and all of that because of institutionalized teaching. Done. Like that. That's why. I promise you that if you think that they were heretics, keep digging. Keep digging, yeah. Keep digging, keep digging. Because eventually you are going to find the bedrock of why you think that. And it's not necessarily as clean cut as you might otherwise think it is. And a lot tied into that stems on this whole idea of all of this stuff. This, the first Enochs of it all, the second Enochs of it all, the Apocrypha, all of that, they get labeled as fan fiction, as fake, as false, as all of those things. But when you're saying that these things are literal, half the time, you're quoting from concepts from the Apocrypha. That's literally what you're doing. Like, that, it's just a different form of Jewish mythology. It's literally taking from the same basis of conversation. Like, that's the thing that I find fascinating. But when you call that out, no, it's different for this reason and that reason and this reason and that reason. And I'm like, okay, I do think, and I just want the record to show, I do think that there are some aspects of that whole line of teaching that I think start to go off the rails. I think it's very heavily steeped in, again, Jewish mythology and all of that sort of stuff. I think that there's a lot that goes into it. That's part of the reason why I fundamentally love and hate the work that the late Dr. Michael Heiser did with The Unseen Realm. I think there are some aspects of it that at least he actually interjected like into the conversation. The fact that there is tons of scriptural evidence for the fact that it's not all just angels and demons, y'all. That's not the sum total of the spiritual realm. But then he starts to pull in from like second Enoch and third Enoch and different books like that. And that's where I'm like, I'm sorry, man. I can't keep tracking with you with what you're positing here. First Enoch, I still think is largely fabricated.
Careful.
But I do think that there are aspects of it that are just simply based in history. They're just based in historicity.
My turn?
Yeah.
Is it my turn? Okay.
You held up your hand.
Okay. I don't want to interrupt. When Joe's on a roll, you get out of the way, man. Like,
just let him talk.
Let him go. So here's the swerve. Since we keep using wrestling terms, here's the swerve on this.
Prerequisite. When we talk,
yeah, that's
when
true.
We get together, it just, they have to, all the wrestling terms have to fly.
So here's the swerve.
I'm just proud I know what kayfabe is.
Hey, I noticed that you were like popped up for that one. So shout out to you, Christian, on that one. Here's the swerve on this very specific thing we're on right now. When it comes to the Apocrypha, I actually agree with Joe. I'm not so much, I have not spent enough time with the pseudepigrapha to really have a very strong opinion towards it. From my, what did you say? Brain rot. From my brain rot education, you dick. The pseudepigrapha is painted poorly. It is presented as it, something not to be trusted. I do have more of a historical weight towards the Apocrypha. And part of that is my education actually did speak positively towards the Apocrypha, but also just my own personal research. And reading it myself and studying it from other perspectives, I actually do put some weight towards what the Apocrypha has to say. I can understand in certain aspects why it didn't get canonized within the Protestant Bible. And part of the whole, well, beyond King James. And part of that gets us off into a whole other conversation about why and why not this thing did and did not get canonized, depending on whose group you are a part of. Because if you're Orthodox, you have even more books in your Bible. You have some of the pseudepigrapha books in there. I will say, at some point, I do need to spend some time with the Book of Enoch, because all you nerds are so into it. Like, I don't... Like, I have never given a rip. That is my stance. The Book of Enoch, First Enoch, I don't care. That is the official stance of my seminary life. I don't care. But so many of you guys, Josh wants it in the Bible. And I know that's a popular opinion beyond him, Captain Uno Reverse. That this is supposed to be a book that should be in the Bible, because it is talked about in, what is that, Jude, at least it gets quoted. And again, if you are coming from this mytho standpoint, yeah, you might want to be familiar with some of these other writings, because at least they were being passed around. So that's all I have to say about all of that.
It's a blind squirrel finding the nut.
That's with Josh saying that it should be in the Bible. I feel like that's one of his more lukewarm heretical stances that he has. So, like, there's that.
Love you, babe.
Yeah. So, I do want to throw out there that there is a part of me that is like, yeah, give me, you know, I'm in the middle of this series that I'm in the camp that it's a mockumentary series on cryptozoology and all of that. It tries to pass itself off as real. If it is real, then there are giant continuity holes. I'll just leave it at that. But one of the guys says in it, you hit a certain age where you're just like, you know what, give me all the weird. Just the weirder the like, I just want it all. And follow the rabbit trail, especially for those of you that are following the AMP shows and all of that. Follow the breadcrumb trail of the different shows that I either co-host, have been on, have done guest spots on, all of that sort of stuff. I've given a whole bunch of my stories over the last several years and all of that. But to sum it up, I've gone from occult to pastor, and it's been a long road and all of that. There's weird stuff out there. I'm just gonna say I know what I've experienced, and there's weird stuff out there. So there's a part of me that's like, so divine beings came to Earth and interbred with women, and then we have superhumans walking around. Y'all, that's a comic book intro. Like, that's a comic book story right there. Like, sign me up, yes. Like, that's how you get the mutant gene. If you want to know how you get the X Factor,
I mean,
like, yeah, that's been brought up before. Sign me up. Like, I'm cool. Like, I don't, like, if I'm wrong, awesome. I'll eat. I will scarf down that slice of humble pie and take a glass of milk with it, because that means that's even more credibility in the camp of the supernatural and the spiritual and all of that sort of stuff. But like the other gentleman on today's panel, each one of us in our own way, in our different lanes, with our different emphases and all of that sort of stuff. Are we biased in certain ways? Absolutely, because we're human. Are we leaned in certain ways? Absolutely, because we're human. Are we products of our background, even though a lot of us try to shed in different ways our background and what brought us to the dance? Absolutely. That is, again, very uniquely human. But each one of us cares a lot about being intellectually, we care a lot about intellectual integrity.
Yes. Yeah.
And so even though there is a level of this where I'm like, yeah, absolutely, like, cool, there's also the other part of me where I'm like, I'm not sold. Like, I can't be sold. Like, I don't, at least not with what's on the table. I've yet to see something. I honestly would put this in the same boat. Here, you want more? One more? I'll be the heat-seeking magnet of today's episode. I'm not convinced of the flood.
I knew that. You had to tell me. Happened.
Yeah, like I just don't. I think that there's room on the table for it to have been a story. I think there's room on the table for it to be a localized flood. I think there's room on the table to be a worldwide flood. If the older I've gotten, the more I've known, the more I've been like, yeah, okay. I used to be hardcore. It was only regional, and I've since like opened up my horizons more and more. But like, I would put this in that same exact camp. I just don't, I'm not, there's not enough that is actually there to actually sell me one way or another to definitively state this is what happened. This is the story.
Well, the flood is what happens when God wants to put those dragon bones under the earth to test our faith, Joe.
You know, there's a whole, like, Disneyland you can go to at the Creation Museum to have you convinced towards that, right?
It will not. That's, anyway, I'm not going to, I will not take your bait. I will not fall for your trap, Brandon.
Dang it.
He was there, too. I could see it. I want to be respectful towards everyone's time. I know, Joe, your time is running out here. So I'll do a little, start wrapping this up a little bit, and then we can maybe have some final takes before we go. First off, it's obviously aliens. I had somebody say that to me once. That I did have an.
I didn't even mention that one.
It's obvious.
I don't want to derail it.
It's obviously aliens. Which I guess if we're going to go with that's how we get the X gene and our mutation, we might as well keep the aliens on the table as well. I do think in all of this schlock, which it's really what it feels like at this point, in all of this schlock, I do want to come back to that one turn we took where I think we did our due justice of keeping this in the category of schlock rather than the conspiracy theory. If there is anything, yes, there are more conservative people than Christian out there, really, because all of this is such on a sliding spectrum. When you pair Christian up against some of these other guys, he's a damn liberal like Joe, like one of those Catholic Christians like Joe. Like, I just,
I mean, yeah,
but like, the conspiracy theory mentality, this is something I'm going to be doing an episode on here in the next. Damn it. I just promised something.
Have you ever seen someone die in
something? Okay, so
I see the words leaving Brandon's mouth and he's like, nope.
The panic was, can I take him back?
Nope. This is something I have been like studying more though. Like why those of the very conservative evangelical world love conspiracy theories. And why conspiracy theories are so much more digestible than what is actually on the table, or in this case, just that uncomfiness that you just have to sometimes sit in of, I don't know. And that's okay.
Yeah.
So that's all I want to say. That's my wrap up, but I'll give you guys final word as well.
Yeah, if you're interested in more, we try and stream once a month on Systematic Ecology YouTube page. The last episode did not get uploaded in podcast form because, number one, I forgot, and number two, a certain Yeshua friend of ours deleted it before I could get to it. So, sorry about that. But, yeah, if you think we're interesting enough, if you love the banter, head our way. We'd love to have you. And also, thank you, Brandon.
Joe, final thoughts.
So, when you look at something like this, I just would encourage anybody, if you have a camp that you're in and you think this is the most plausible explanation and all of that, then I'll say two things. One, hold it loosely, but then also, dude, say it with your whole chest. Like, okay, that's what you believe. Just do it. Like own it. And that's those, if you can balance between those two things, then you have found yourself in this world called nuance, where you're able to look at the world with a sense of nuance. And I think if we can stop being afraid of not having a clear and direct answer, then it opens the door for more fascinating, more interesting, and yes, weirder conversations, because you're willing to unpack these things and kick the can around without a need of superiority or to be correct. So do yourself the favor and look into this stuff beyond just looking at your favorite conspiracy theorist or whatever the case may be. Actually unpack it yourself and figure out what you believe and why you believe it.
Those of us who aren't scared of such things would call that some form of deconstruction. Anyway, so thank you all for listening to today's episode. And yes, please go check out Friday Night Frights. Actually, as we're recording this episode, the boys are going to be going live later on. And I will be posting this episode as part of the Friday Night Frights lineup. It will be the replacement for that one that Yeshua Noel accidentally deleted. There you go. You have something to replace it with. But thank you all for listening. Check out their shows. Go check out all the stuff that Joe and his kingdom friends are all up to in his network. And thank you all for listening. This has been My Seminary Life. Remind you, as always, that theology is for everyone. So keep on studying, because sometimes it does get a little weird when you do that. Okay.